أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
سورة 76 الدهر Introduction. Title. This surah has two titles, Ad-Dahr and Al-Insan, and both words occur in its opening verse. Period of Revelation. Most Quran scholars, Al-Zamakhshari, Al-Razi, Al-Baydawi, Al-Nisapuri, Ibn Kathir, and many others, take it to be a Makkan surah, while Al-Alusi refers to this as the consensus view. Some Quran commentators are of the opinion that the whole surah was revealed in Medina, and some others think that it is part Meccan and part Medinan. For the latter, verses 8 to 10 of this surah were sent down in Medina, while the rest were revealed in Mecca. In terms of its contents and stylistic features, it differs from the Medinan surahs. On reflection, it appears to be Meccan and seems to have been revealed at the same time as verses 1 to 7 of Surah Al-Mudathir. Verses 8 to 10 of this surah appear to be its essential part, and there is nothing to suggest that the verses preceding and following these had come down some 15 to 16 years earlier, or that verses 8 to 10 were inserted into the surahs later on. What has lent credence to the view that it is a Medinan surah is the report by Atta on the authority of Ibn Abbas. According to this report, Hassan and Hussein once fell ill, and the Prophet, peace be upon him, and many companions called on their father Ali. Some suggested that he make a vow to Allah for their recovery. Accordingly, Ali, Fatima, and their maid Fiza vowed that if Allah cured Hassan and Hussein, they would fast for 3 days. By God's grace, they recovered, and all three started fasting. As Ali did not have any food in his house, he took 3 sa' of barley on loan. However, another report clarifies that he had earned this grain through manual labor. On the first day, as they sat down to break their fast, a needy person came and begged for food. They gave him all the food they had and went to bed after drinking some water. The same thing happened the next day, as they gave all their food to an orphan and again only had water. On the third day, when they were about to break their fast, a prisoner asked for food, and they gave him everything. On the fourth day, Ali, along with both his sons, called on the Prophet, peace be upon him, who noted their miserable condition on account of their hunger. When he went to Ali's house, he saw Fatima suffering from pangs of hunger too. Tears welled up in his eyes on seeing all this. It was then that Gabriel visited him and gave him the glad tiding that Allah had felicitated him regarding his blessed family. The archangel then recited the whole surah to him. According to Ibn Mihran, he recited only verses 5 to 31. However, Ibn Mardaway narrates Ibn Abbas's report, which says only verse 8 was sent down in the context of Ali and Fatima. It makes no reference to the above incident. This story appears in Ali ibn Ahmad al-Wahdi's Tafsir al-Wasit, which is most probably used as a source by al-Zamakhshari, al-Razi, as well as by al-Nisapuri. The chain of narrators for this story is extremely unreliable, and moreover, with scrutiny, the text appears equally incredible. Had a single person begged for food, why was he given the food of all the 4 or 5 members of the household? Even after giving him adequate food, the household could have shared the remainder. Equally unbelievable is the version that Ali and Fatima, who possessed insights into matters of faith, preferred to allow their weak, ill children to starve, considering it an act of virtue. Moreover, prisoners were never allowed to beg for food in Islamic history. They were incarcerated by the state, and it catered for their food and clothing. If a prisoner was placed under someone's custody, the custodian would be responsible for looking after him. It was unthinkable that a prisoner in Medina would have begged for food. Even if one overlooks all these flaws in the report and accepts it at face value, at most it tells us that when the Prophet's family member did this good act, Gabriel congratulated the Prophet, peace be upon him, informing him that Allah had approved of their good deed. For they had done is mentioned approvingly in this surah. However, this does not necessarily mean that this surah was revealed on that occasion. When a report says that a particular verse was sent down with a reference to a particular incident, it does not mean that their dates tally exactly. What the report signifies instead is that a particular incident is related to a certain verse. In his Al-Itqan, Al-Suyuti cites Ibn Taymah's opinion. As reporters contend that a particular verse was occasioned by a certain incident, it may mean either its circumstantial setting or its relationship with a particular command, though it may have nothing to do with that incident. He has also quoted Badr al-Din Zarkashi's interpretation that features in his Al-Burhan fi Ulum al-Quran. It was customary on the part of the companions and the successors to speak of a verse in connection with a particular matter, signifying that a particular command is related to that. This does not mean that a particular matter caused the revelation of that verse, but only that a command is inferred from it. Subject matter and themes. The theme of this surah is to apprise man of his true position in this world. It further instructs him that if he realizes the true nature of his position well and behaves gratefully towards God, he will have a happy end. But if he takes to the path of unbelief, his end will be terrible. This theme also features in the longer surahs of the Quran, with its full details. In the early Meccan surahs, however, the same truth is presented in a pithy and a highly effective manner. Brief sentences befitting a proverbial saying are employed in these surahs. Firstly, man is reminded that at the first stage of conception he is unworthy of mention. He is created from the drop of an intermingling sperm, and even his mother is unaware of him at this point. No one could then say that this microscopic entity would grow one day into a human being, the supreme creature of God on earth. Next, man is warned that he has been created so that God might try him in this world. Accordingly, in contrast to other creatures, he is given certain faculties. He is granted life in order to test whether he freely chooses to be thankful or unthankful to God, his Lord. Verse 4 categorically tells man that the unbelievers will be subjected to a terrible end in the hereafter. Verses 5 to 22 spell out one after the other that bounties will be conferred on the believers who have been thankful to their Lord. Not only is their reward mentioned, but it is also clarified which acts will entitle them to divine reward. One of the striking features of the early Meccan surahs is that these introduce the basic articles of Islamic faith and concepts and also the moral values on which Islam places a premium. Moreover, they identify the vices that Islam wants man to shun. The consequences of these virtues and vices in this life are not discussed. Rather, the focus of attention is on their impact in the afterlife. Three important points are brought to the Prophet's attention in the next section of the surah. The first one is that God has revealed the Quran to him in brief portions. The unbelievers are thus told that the Quran is not the product of the Prophet's mind. In of his infinite wisdom, God has decided to send down the Quran piecemeal. Another truth imparted to the Prophet, peace be upon him, is that he should keep discharging his duty, no matter how it long takes to enforce God's decree. He should persevere with his mission and should never yield to the unbelievers. The last point pressed home is that the Prophet, peace be upon him, should glorify God morning and evening, offer prayers and worship him during the long watches of the night. This will bless him with steadfastness in confronting the unbelievers' recalcitrance. The unbelievers are guilty of having disregarded the hereafter, and they are only after the joys of this world. They are reminded that it is God who has created them. They are not there by their own will and power. They owe their handsome, strong bodies to Him, and so He is able to do with them as He wishes. He may disfigure them or replace them with another community after destroying them. With His power, He can recreate them in any other form. The concluding verses state that the Quran stands out as an exhortation. Whoever wills may find a way to his Lord. However, man's willingness shall be of no avail until God Himself wills it. He decides things out of His knowledge and wisdom. He admits to His mercy whomsoever He pleases. And He has prepared a grievous chastisement for the wrongdoers.